everyone, welcome to another episode of the Pop Reading. In this episode, we will be reading chapters 14 and 15 of the Heroes of Olympus, Lost Hero. In the yesterday, we read about Leo helping this dragon and Jason, who has a she-wolf in his dream. Now we're going to read 14. Jason woke up to the sound of thunder. Then he remembered where he was. It was always thundering in cabin one above his car. The dome ceiling was decorated with a blue and white mosaic like a cloudy sky. The cloud tiles shifted across the ceiling, changing from white to black. Thunder rumbled through the room, and gold tiles like veins of lightning, except for the cup that the other campers had brought him. The cabin had no regular furniture, no chairs, tables, or dressers, as far as Jason could tell. It didn't even have a bathroom. The walls were carved with alcoves, and each holding a bronze brazier or a golden eagle statue on a marble pedestal in the center of the room, a 20-foot-tall full-color statue of Zeus in classic Greek robes stood with a shield at his side and a lightning bolt raised, ready to smite somebody. Jason studied the statue, looking for anything that he had in common with the Lord of the Sky. Black hair? Nope. Grumbly. Expression? Well, maybe beard? No thanks. In his robes and sandals. Zeus looked like a really buff, really angry hippie. Yeah, Cabin One, a big honor. The other campers had told him, sure, if you like sleeping in a cold temple by yourself with hippie, Zeus frowning down at you all night. Jason got up and rubbed his neck. His whole body was stiff from bad sleep and summoning lightning. That little trick last night hadn't been as easy as he had let on. It had almost made him pass out. Next to the cot, new clothes were laid out for him. Jeans, sneakers, and an orange Camp Half-Blood t-shirt. He definitely needed a change of clothes. But looking down at his tattered purple shirt, he was reluctant to change it. It felt wrong somehow putting on the camp shirt. He still couldn't believe he belonged here. Despite everything they told him, he thought about his dream, hoping more memories could come back to him about Lupa, or that ruined house in the red woods. He knew he'd been there before. The wolf was real, but his head ached when he tried to remember. The marks on his forearms seemed to burn. If he could find those ruins, he could find his past. Whatever he was growing inside that rock spire, Jason had to stop it. He looked at Hippie Zeus. You're welcome to come. The statue said nothing. Thanks, Pops, Jason muttered. He changed clothes and checked his reflection in Zeus's shield. His face looked watery and strained in the metal, like he was dissolving in a pool of gold. Definitely, he didn't look as good as Piper had last night, as she'd suddenly been transformed. Jason still wasn't sure how he felt about that. He acted like an idiot, announcing in front of everyone that she was a knockout. She was knocked out. Nothing like there'd been anything wrong with her before. Sure, she looked great after Aphrodite zapped her, but she also didn't look like herself. Not comfortable with the attention, Jason had felt bad for her. Maybe that was crazy, considering she'd just been claimed by a goddess and turned into the most gorgeous girl at camp. Everybody had started fawning over her, telling her how amazing she was and how obviously she should be the one who went on the quest. But that attention had nothing to do with who she was. New dress, new makeup, glowing pink aura, and boom. Suddenly, people liked her. Jason felt like her. He understood that. Last night, when he called down lightning, the other campus reactions had seemed familiar to him. He was pretty sure he'd been dealing with that for a long time. People looking at him in awe just because he was the son of Zeus. Treating him special. But it didn't have anything to do with him. Nobody cared about him. Just his big, scary daddy standing behind him with a doomsday bolt as if to say, "Respect this kid or eat voltage." After the campfire, when people started heading back to their cabins, Jason had gone up to Piper and formally asked her to come with him on the quest. She'd still been in a state of shock, but she nodded, rubbing her arms, which must have been cold in that sleeveless dress. "Aphrodite took my snowboarding jacket," she muttered, mugged by my own mom. In the first row of amphitheater, Jason found a blanket and wrapped it around her shoulders. "We'll get you a new jacket," he promised. She managed to smile. He wanted to wrap his arms around her, but he restrained himself. He was as shallow as everyone else, trying to make a move on her because she turned all beautiful. He was glad Piper was going with him on the quest. Jason had tried to act brave at the campfire, but it was just that, and just that an act of idea. The idea of going up against an evil force, powerful enough to kidnap Hera, scared him witless, especially since he didn't even know his own past. He need help, and it felt right. Piper should be with him. But things were already complicated without figuring how much he liked her and why. He'd already messed with her head enough. He slipped on his new shoes, ready to get out of that cold, empty cabin. Then he spotted something he hadn't noticed the night before: a brazier that had been moved out of one of the alcoves to create a sleeping nick, a bedroll, a backpack, and even some pictures taped to the wall. Jason walked over. Whoever had slept there, it had been a long time ago. The bedroll smelled musty. The backpack was covered with a thin film of dust. Some of the photos once taped to the wall had lost their stickiness and fallen to the floor. One picture showed Anubis much younger, maybe 8, but Jason could tell it was she. Maybe this is wrong grammar. I think it should be 8, but Jason could tell it was her. But whatever. Same blonde hair and gray eyes. Same distracted look, like she was thinking a million things at once. She stood next to a sandy-haired guy, about 14 or 15, with a mischievous smile and rag leather armor over a t-shirt. He was pointing to an alley behind them, like he was telling the photographer, "Let's go meet things in the dark alley and kill them." A second photo showed Anubis and the same guy sitting at a campfire, laughing hysterically. Finally, Jason picked up one of the photos that had fallen to. It was a strip of pictures like you take in a do-it-yourself photo booth. Anubis and the sandy-haired guy but with another girl between them. She was maybe 15 with a black hair, choppy like Piper's, a black leather jacket, and silver jewelry. She looked like kind of a goth, but she was caught mid-laugh, and it was clear she was with her two best friends. "That's Talia," someone said. Jason turned. Annabeth was peering over his shoulder. Her expression was sad, like the picture brought back hard memories. "She's the other child of Zeus who lived here, but not for long. Sorry, I should have knocked." "It's fine, Jason said. "Not like I think of this place as home." Annabeth was dressed for travel with a winter coat over her camp clothes, her knife at her belt, and a backpack across her shoulder. Jason said, "Don't suppose you've changed your mind about coming with us?" She shook her head. You got a good team already. I'm off to look for Percy."
"You know Percy's missing, sir." Annabeth is, of course she wants to look for Percy.
Jason was a little disappointed. He would have appreciated to have someone on the trip who knew what they were doing, so he wouldn't feel like he was leading Piper and Leo off a cliff. "Hey, you'll do fine," Annabeth promised. "Something tells me it isn't your first quest." Jason had a vague suspicion she was right, but that didn't make him feel any better. Everyone seemed to think he was so brave and confident, but they didn't see how lost he really felt. How could they trust him when he didn't even know who he was? He looked at the pictures of Annabeth smiling. He wondered how long it had been since she'd smiled. She must really like this Percy guy to search for him so hard, and that made Jason a little envious. Was anyone searching for him right now? What if somebody cared for him that much and was going out of her mind with worry, and he couldn't even remember his old life? "And you know who I am, he guessed. "Don't you?" Annabeth gripped the hilt. "You know who I am, don't you? He guessed, "don't you?" Annabeth gripped the hilt of her dagger. She looked for a chair to sit on, but of course there weren't any. "Honestly, Jason, I'm not sure. My best guess, you're a loner. It happens sometimes for one reason or another. The camp never found you, but you survived anyway by constantly moving around, trained yourself to fight, handled the monsters on your own. You beat the odds. The first thing Chiron said to me, Jason remembered, was you should be dead. That could be why, Annabeth said. Most demigods would never make it on their own. And a child of Zeus? It doesn't get any more dangerous than that. The chances of you reaching age 15 without finding camp, half-blood, or dying microscopic, but like I said, it does happen. Talia ran away when she was young. She survived on her own for years, even took care of me for a while. So maybe you were a loner too. Jason held out his arm, and these marks. Annabeth glanced at the tattoo. Clearly, they bothered her. Well, the eagle is the symbol of Zeus, so that makes sense. The 12 lines, maybe they stand for years. If you'd been making them since you were 3 years old, SPQR, that's the motto of the old Roman Empire, Senatus Populusque Romanus. The Senate and the people of Rome, why you would burn that on your own arm. I don't know, unless you had a really harsh Latin teacher. Oh. Jason was pretty sure that
that that wasn't the reason. It also didn't seem possible he'd been on his own his whole life. But what else made sense? Annabeth had been pretty clear. Camp Half-Blood was the only safe place in the world for demigods. I had a weird dream last night, he said. It seemed like a stupid thing to confide, but Annabeth didn't look surprised. Happens all the time to demigods, she said. What did you see? He told her about the wolves in the ruined house and the two rock spires. As he talked, Annabeth started panicking, looking more and more agitated. You don't remember where this house is, she asked. Okay, this is a little weird. What if Percy's in this house? Just guessing. What if? There's a chance. I mean, not that, like, not possible or possible, but there's definitely a chance that Percy's there. Jason was a little disappointed. He would have appreciated having somebody on the trip who knew what they were doing. Wait, never mind. Jason shook his head. But I'm sure I've been there before. Redwoods? She mused. Could be northern California. And the she-wolf, I've studied goddesses, spirits, and monsters my whole life. I've never heard of Lupa. She said the enemy was a woman. I thought maybe it was Hera, but I wouldn't trust Hera, but I don't think she's the enemy. And that thing rising out of the earth, Annabeth's expression darkened. You've got to stop it. You know what it is, don't you? He asked. Or at least, you've got to guess. I saw your face last night at the campfire. You looked at Chiron like it was suddenly dawning on you. But you didn't want to scare us. Annabeth hesitated. Jason, the thing about prophecies, the more you know, the more you try to change them. And that can be disastrous. Chiron believed it's better that you find your own path, finding out things in your own time. If he told me everything he knew before my first quest with Percy, I've got to admit, I'm not sure I would have been able to go through with it. For your quest, it's even more important. That bad, huh? Not if you succeed. At least, I hope not. I hope not. But I don't even know where to start. Where am I supposed to go? Follow the monsters, Annabeth suggested. Jason thought about that. The storm spirit who'd attacked him at the Grand Canyon had said he was being recalled to his boss. If Jason could track the storm spirits, he might be able to find the person controlling them. And maybe that would lead him to Hera's prison. Okay, he said. How do I find storm winds? Personally, I asked a god of wind, Annabeth said. Alice is the master of winds, but he's a little unpredictable. No one finds him unless he wants to be found. I tried one of our four seasonal wind gods that worked for Alice. The nearest one, the one who has the most dealings with heroes in Boreas, the North Wind. So if I looked him up on Google Map, oh, he's not hard to find, Annabeth promised. He settled in North America like all the other gods, so of course he picked the oldest northern settlement. About as far north as you can go. Maine? Jason guessed. Farther. Jason tried to envision a map. What was farther north than Maine? The oldest northern settlement. Canada, he decided. Quebec? Annabeth smiled. I hope you speak French. Jason actually felt a spark of excitement. Quebec?
At least now he had a goal to find the north, wind, track down the storm spirits, find out who they worked for and where that ruined house was. Free Hera, all in 4 days. Cake. Thanks, Annabeth. He looked at the photo, both pictures still in his hand. So, you said it was dangerous being a child of Zeus. What happened to Talia? Oh, she's fine, Annabeth said. She became a hunter of Artemis. You didn't know hunters of Artemis can't, like, marry or be with boys and stuff. Artemis, one of them handmaidens of the goddess. They roam around the country killing monsters. We don't see them around at camp very often. Jason glanced over at the huge statue of Zeus. He understood why Talia had slept in this alcove. It was the only place in the cabin not in Hippie Zeus's line of sight. And even that hadn't been enough. She chosen to follow Artemis and be part of a group. Rather to stay in this cold, drafty temple alone with her 20-foot-tall dad, Jason's dad, glowering down at her, eat voltage. Jason didn't have any trouble understanding Talia's feelings. He wondered if there was a hunters group for guys. Who's the other kid in the photo? He asked. The sandy haired guy. Annabeth's expression tightened. Touchy subject. That's Luke, she said. He's dead now. Jason decided it was best not to ask more. But the way Annabeth said Luke's name, he wondered if maybe Percy Jackson wasn't the only boy Annabeth had ever liked. He focused again on Talia's face. He kept thinking this photo of her was important. He was missing something. Jason felt a strange sense of connection to this other child of Zeus, someone who might understand his confusion, maybe even answer some questions. But another voice inside him, an insistent whisper, said, "Dangerous. Stay away." "How old is she?" he asked. "Hard to say. She was a tree for a while. Now she's immortal." What? His expression must have been pretty good, because Annabeth laughed. "Don't worry, it's not something that all children of Zeus go through. It's a long story, but, well, she was out of commission for a long time. If she aged regularly, she'd been in her 20s by 20s now, but she still looked the same as in that picture. Like she's about, well, your age, 15 or 16? Something the she-wolf had said in his dream. Now that Jason, he found himself asking, what's her last name? Annabeth looked uneasy. She didn't use a last name. She didn't use a last name, really. If she had to, she'd use her mom's, but they didn't get along. Talia ran away when she was pretty young. Jason waited. "Grace," Annabeth said. "Talia Grace. Jason's fingers went numb. The picture fluttered to the floor. "You okay?" Annabeth asked. A shred of memory had ignited. Maybe a tiny piece that Hera forgotten to steal. Or maybe she left it there on purpose, just enough for him to remember that name. And know that digging up his past was terribly, terribly dangerous. "You should be dead," Chiron had said. It wasn't a comment, but about Jason beating the odds as a loner. Chiron knew something specific, something about Jason's family. The she-wolf's word in his dreams finally made sense to him. Her clever joke at this expense could imagine Lupa growling a wolfish laugh. What is it? Annabeth pressed. Jason couldn't keep this to himself. It would kill him, and he had to get Annabeth's help. If she knew Talia, maybe she could advise him. You have to swear not to tell anyone else, he said. Jason, swear it, he urged, until I figure out what's going on. What this all means. He rubbed the burn tattoos on his forearm. You have to keep a secret. Annabeth hesitated, but curiosity won out. All right, until you tell me, it's okay. I won't share what you say with anyone else. I swear on the River Styx. Thunder rumbled, even louder than usual for the cabin. You are our saving grace, the wolf had snarled. Jason picked up the photo from the floor. My last name is Grace, he said. This is my sister. Annabeth turned pale. Jason could see her wrestling with dismay, disbelief, anger. She thought he was lying. His claim was impossible, and part of him felt the same way. But as soon as he spoke the words, he knew they were true. Then the doors of the cabin burst open. Half a dozen campers spilled in, led by a bald guy from Iris. But hurry, he said, and Jason couldn't tell if his expression was excitement or fear. The dragon is back. That's it, everyone. That's chapter 14. And we will be reading chapter 15 in just a minute. And if you're making podcasts, I highly recommend to use Podcastle for your editing tool and RSS.com to post your podcast. That's it for this chapter. See? And we are back again from... Now we can read chapter 15. Yeah. We're gonna read chapter 15. Piper. Okay. Piper woke up and immediately grabbed a mirror. There were plenty of those in the Aphrodite cabin. She sat on her bunk looking at her reflection and groaned. She was still gorgeous. Last night at the campfire, she tried everything. She had messed up her hair, washed the makeup off her face, cried to make her eyes red. Nothing worked. Her hair popped back to perfection. The magic makeup reapplied to her eyes, refused to get puffy or bloodshot. She would have changed clothes, but she had nothing to change into. Aphrodite offered her some, laughing behind her back, she was sure. But each outfit was even more fashionable and ridiculous than what she had on. Now, after a horrible night's sleep, still no change. Piper normally looked like a zombie in the morning, but her hair was styled like a supermodel's, and her skin was perfect. Even that horrible zit at the base of her nose, which she had for so many days, she started to call a mob, had disappeared. She growled in frustration and raked her fingers through her hair. No use. The Jew just popped back into the place. She looked like Cherokee Barbie. From across the cabin, Drew called, "Oh, honey, it won't go away," her voice dripped with false sympathy. "Mom's blessing will last at least another day, maybe a week if you're lucky." Piper gritted her teeth. "A week?" The other Aphrodite kids... About a dozen girls have five, and five guys smirked and snickered at her discomfort. Piper knew she should play cool, not let them get under her skin. She dealt with shallow popular kids plenty of times, but this was different. These were her brothers and sisters, even if she had nothing in common with them. And how Aphrodite had managed to have so many kids so close in age. Never mind, she didn't want to know. Don't worry, hon. Drew blotted her fluorescent lipstick. You're thinking you don't belong here. We could have agreed more, isn't that right, Michelle? One of the guys flinched. Yeah, sure. Her lashes, everyone else watched, not daring to speak. So anyways, people, 15 minutes until breakfast. The cabin's not going to clear itself. And Michelle, Mitchell, I think you've learned your lesson, right, sweetie? So you're on garbage patrol, just for today. Okay. Show Piper how it's done, because I have a feeling she'll have that job soon if she survives her quest. Now get to work, everybody. It's my bathroom time. Everybody started rushing around, making beds and folding clothes, while Drew scooped up her makeup hair dryer and marched into the bathroom. Someone inside yelped, and a girl about 11 was kicked out hastily, wrapped in towels and with shampoo still in her hair. The door slammed shut, and the girl started crying. A couple of older campers comforted her and wiped the bubbles off her hair. Seriously, Piper said to no one in particular, you let Drew treat you like this? A few kids shot Piper nervous looks, like they might actually agree, but they said nothing. The campers kept working. So Piper couldn't see why the cabin needs so much cleaning. It was a life-size dollhouse with pink walls and white window trim. Lace curtains were pastel blue and green, which of course matched the sheets and feather comforters on all the beds. The guys had one row of bunks separated by a curtain, but their section of the cabin was just as neat and ordinary as the girls. Something was definitely unnatural about them. Every camper had a wooden camp chest at the foot of their bunk, with their name painted on it, and Piper guessed that the clothes in each chest were neatly folded and color-coordinated. The only bit of individualism was how the campers decorated their private bunk spaces. Each had slightly different pictures tacked up of whatever celebrities they thought were hot. And you? Few had personal photos too, but most were actors or singers or whatever. Piper hoped she might not see the poster. It had been almost a year since the movie, and she thought by now surely everyone has torn down those old tattered advertisements and tacked up something newer. But no such luck. The spotted one on the wall by the storage closet in the middle of a college of famous heartthrobs. The title was Lared, Red King of Sparta. Under that, the poster showed the leading man, a three-quarters shot of bare-chested bronze flesh with ripped pectorals and six-pack abs. He was clad in only a green kilt and a purple cape sword in hand. He looked like he and just been rubbed in oil. His short black hair gleamed and revealed of sweat pouring off his rugged face. Those dark, sad eyes facing the camera as if to say, "I will kill you. I will kill you, man, and steal your woman. Ha ha." It was the most ridiculous poster of all time. Piper and her dad had a good laugh over it the first time they saw it. Then the movie made a bajillion dollars. The poster graphic popped up everywhere. Piper couldn't get away from it. At school, walking down the street, even online, it became the poster. The most embarrassing thing in her life. And yeah, it was a picture of her dad. She turned away so no one would think she was staring at it. Maybe when she went to breakfast, she could tear it down and they wouldn't notice. She tried to look busy, but she didn't have any extra clothes to fold. She straightened her bed, then realized the top blanket was the one Jason had wrapped around her shoulders last night. She picked it up and pressed it to her face. It smelled of wood smoke, but unfortunately, not of Jason. He was the only person who'd been genuinely nice to her after the claiming. Like he cared about her, how she felt, not just about her stupid new clothes. God, she'd wanted to kiss him, but he'd seemed so uncomfortable, almost scared of her. She couldn't really blame him. She'd been glowing pink. "Excuse me," said a voice by her feet. The garbage control guy, Mitchell, was crawling around on all fours, picking up chocolate wrappers and crumpled notes from under the bunk beds. Apparently, the Aphrodite kids weren't 100% neat freaks at all. After all, she moved out of the way. She moved out of his way. "What did you do to make Drew mad? What did you do to make Drew mad?" He glanced over at the bathroom door to make sure it was still closed. "Last night after you were claimed, I said you might not be so bad. It wasn't much of a compliment, but Piper was stunned. An Aphrodite kid had actually stood up for her?" "Thanks," she said. Mitchell shrugged. "Yeah, well, see where it got me. But for what it's worth, welcome to Cabin 10. A girl with blonde pigtails and braces raced up with a pile of clothes in her arms. She looked around furtively like she was delivering nuclear materials. "I brought you these," she whispered. "Piper, meet Lacey," Mitchell said, still crawling around on the floor. Hi, Lacey said breathlessly. "You can change clothes. The blessing won't stop you. This is just, you know, a backpack. Some rations, ambrosia, and nectar for emergencies. Some jeans, a few extra t-shirts, and a warm jacket. The boots might be a little snug, but, well, we took up a collection. Good luck on your quest." Lacey dumped the things on the bed and started to hurry away. But Piper caught her arm. "Hold on, at least let me thank you. Why are you rushing off?" Lacey looked like she might shake apart from nervousness. Oh well, Drew might find out, Mitchell explained. "I might have to wear the shoes of shame," Lacey gulped. "The what?" Piper, Lacey, and Mitchell both pointed at black shelves mounted in the corner of the room like an altar. Displayed on it were a hideous pair of
orthopedic nurse shoes, bright white, thick soles. I had to wear them for a week once, Lacey whimpered. They don't go with anything, and there were worse punishments. Mitchell warned, Drew can charm speak. See, not many Aphrodite kids have that power. But if she tries hard enough, she can get you to do some pretty embarrassing things. Piper, you're the first person I've seen in a long time who is able to resist her. Charm speak? Piper remembered last night the way the crowd at the campfire had swayed back and forth between Drew's opinion and hers. You mean like you could talk someone into doing things or giving you things like a car? Oh, don't give Drew any ideas, Lacey gasped. But yeah, Mitchell said she could do that. So that's why she's head counselor, Piper said. She convinced you all? Mitchell picked a nasty wad of gum from under Piper's bed. Nah, she inherited the post when Selena Beauregard died in the war. Selena Beauregard died in the war. Drew was second oldest camper automatically gets the post unless somebody with more years or more completed quest wants to challenge, in which case there's a duel, but that hardly ever happens anyway. We've been stuck with Drew in charge since August. She decided to make some changes in the way the cabin is run. Yes, I did, Drew. Suddenly, Drew was there, leaning against the bunk. Lacey squeaked like a guinea pig and tried to run, but Drew put an arm out to stop her. She looked down and at Mitchell. I think you missed some trash, sweetie. You'd better make another pass. Piper glanced toward the bathroom and saw that Drew had dumped everything from the bathroom waste bin. Some pretty nasty things all over the floor. Mitchell sat up on his hot haunches. He glared at Drew like he was about to attack, which Piper would have paid money to see. But finally, he snapped. Fine. Drew smiled. See, Piper, Horn. We're a good cabin here, a good family. Selena Beauregard, though you could take a warning from her, she was secretly passing information to Kronos in the Titan War, helping the enemy. Drew smiled, all sweet and innocent, with her glittery pink makeup in her blow-dried hairlush and smelling like nutmeg. Wonder what nutmeg is. She looked like any popular teenager girl from any high school, but her eyes were as cold as steel. Piper got the feeling Drew was looking straight into her soul, pulling out her secrets, helping the enemy. Oh, none of the other cabins talked about it, Drew confided. They acted like Selena Beauregard was a hero. She sacrificed her life to make things right. Mitchell grumbled. She was a hero. She was a hero. Drew said, another day on garbage patrol. Mitchell, but anyways, Selena lost track of what this cabin is about. We match up cute couples at camp.
We match up cute couples at camp. Then we break them apart and start over. It's the best fun ever. We don't have any business getting involved in other stuff like wars and quests. I certainly haven't been on any quests. They're a waste of time. Lacey raised her hand nervously. But last night you said you wanted to go on a... Drew glared at her, and Lacey's voice died. Most of all, Drew continued, we certainly don't need our image tarnished by spies, do we, Piper? Piper tried to answer, but she couldn't. There was no way Drew could know about her dreams or her dad's kidnapping was there. It's too bad you won't be around, Drew sighed. But if you survived your little quest, don't worry. I'll find somebody to match up with you. Maybe one of this girl's Hephaestus guys, or Clovis. He's pretty repulsive. Drew looked her over with a mix of pity and disgust. Honestly, I didn't think it was possible for Aphrodite to have an ugly child. But who is your father? Was he some sort of mutant, or Tristan McLean? Piper snapped. As soon as she said it, she hated herself. She never ever played the famous dad card, but Drew had driven her over the edge. My dad's Tristan McLean. The stunned silence was gratifying for a few seconds, but Piper felt ashamed of herself. Everybody turned and looked at the poster, her dad flexing his muscles for the whole world to see. Oh my god, half the girl screamed at once. Sweet, a guy said. The dude with the sword who killed that other dude in that movie? He's so hot for an old guy, a girl said, and then she blushed. I mean, I'm sorry. I know he's your dad. That's so weird. It's weird, all right, Piper agreed. Do you think you could get me his autograph? Another girl asked. Piper forced a smile. She couldn't say if my dad survives. Yeah, no problem, she managed. The girl squealed in excitement, and more kids surged forward asking a dozen questions at once. Have you ever been on the set? Do you live in a mansion? Do you have lunch with movie stars? Have you had your rite of passage? That one caught Piper off guard. Rite of what? She asked.
That got Piper.
The girls and guys giggled and shoved each other around. Like this was an embarrassing topic. The rite of passage, an Aphrodite child explained. You get someone to fall in love with you. Then you break their heart, dump them. Once you do that, you've proven yourself worthy of Aphrodite. Piper stared at the crowd to see if they were joking. Break someone's heart on purpose? That's terrible. The others looked confused. Why? A guy asked. Oh my god, a girl said. I bet Aphrodite broke your dad's heart. I bet he never loved anyone again, did he? That's so romantic. When you have your rite of passage, you can be just like Ma. Forget it, Piper yelled a little louder than she'd intended. The other kids backed away. I'm not breaking somebody's heart just for a stupid rite of passage. Which, of course, gave Drew a chance to take back control. Well, there you go. She couldn't. Selena said the same thing. She broke the tradition, fell in love with that Beckendorf boy, and stayed in love. If you ask me, that's why things ended tragically for her. That's not true, Lacey squeaked. But Drew glared at her, and she immediately melted back into the crowd. Hardly matters, Drew continued, because Piper Hahn, you couldn't break anyone's heart anyway. And this nonsense about your dad being Tristan McLean, that's so begging for attention. Several of the kids blinked uncertainly. You mean he's not your dad? No one asked. Drew rolled her eyes.
Please. Now it's time for breakfast. People and Piper has to start that little quest. So let's get her package and get her out of here. Drew broke up the crowd and everyone moving. She called them Han and Dear, but her tone made it clear she expected to obey. She expected to be obeyed. Mitchell and Lacey helped Piper pack. They even guarded the bathroom while Piper went in and changed into a better traveling outfit. The hand-me-downs weren't fancy. Thank God, just well-worn jeans and a t-shirt, a comfortable winter coat, and hiking boots that fit perfectly. She strapped her dagger, Catoptress, to her belt. When Piper came out, she felt almost normal again. The other campers were standing in the bunk. Drew came around and expected Piper turned to Mitchell and Lacey and mouthed, "Thank you." Mitchell nodded grimly. Lacey flashed a full brace of smile. Piper doubted Drew had ever thanked them for anything. She also noticed that the King of Sparta poster had been wadded up and thrown in the trash. Drew's order, no doubt. Even though Piper had wanted to take the poster down herself, now she was totally steamed. When Drew spotted her, she clapped in mock applause. "Very nice. Our little quest girl all dressed in dumpster clothes again. Now off you go. No need to eat breakfast with us. Good luck with whatever. Bye." "Bye." Piper shouldered her bag. She could feel everyone else's eyes on her as she walked to the door. She could just leave and forget about it. That would have been the easy thing. What did she care about this cabin? These shallow kids. Except that some of them had tried to help her. Some of them had even stood up for her. Stood up to Drew for her. She turned at the door. "You know, you all don't have to follow Drew's order." The other kids shifted several glances at Drew, but she looked too stunned to respond. One managed. "She's our head counselor. She's a tyrant, Piper corrected. "You can think for yourselves. There's got to be more to Aphrodite than this." "More than this? What?" "More than this," one kid echoed. Think for ourselves, a second one muttered. "People," Drew screeched, "don't be stupid. She's charm-speaking you." "No," Piper said, "I'm just telling the truth." At least Piper thought that was the case. She didn't understand exactly how this charm speaking business worked, but she didn't feel like she was putting any special powers into her words. She didn't want to win an argument by tricking people. That would make her no better than Drew. Piper simply meant what she said. Besides, even if she tried charm speaking, she had a feeling it wouldn't work very well on another charm speaker like Drew. Drew sneered at her. "You may have a little power, Miss Movie Star, but you don't know the first thing about Aphrodite. You have such great ideas. What do you think this cabin is about, then? Tell them. Then maybe I'll tell them a few things about you, huh?" Piper wanted to make a withering retort, but her anger turned to panic. She was a spy for the enemy, just like Selena Beauregard, an Aphrodite traitor.
Did Drew know about that, or was she bluffing? Under Drew's glare, her confidence began to crumble. Crumble. Not this, Piper managed. Aphrodite is not about this. She turned and stormed out before the other kids could see her blushing. Behind her, Drew started laughing. Not this? Hear that, people. She doesn't have a clue. Piper promised herself she would never ever go back to that cabin. She blinked away her tears and stormed across the green, not sure where she was going until she saw the dragon swooping down from the sky. And that is the end for chapter 15 and the end to this episode. I'll see you tomorrow, and I'm out. Bye.